don't think I'm here so much to speak or, in my opinion, I would like to do a lot of listening. As I took a look at the assignments and the guidelines for guest speakers, I thought maybe I'd go through these. I had a couple of canned presentations and one which I... Are you getting feedback?
Yeah.
That's not the kind of experience.
Is this the minute?
I hope me. Secondly, I hope that we won't confine and the Spirit will lead us beyond the second where we just speak ideas. Because I can have my idea and you can have your idea and we can still leave somewhat unchanged. But I hope there can be an interchange of understanding. To this extent, I'd like to approach the first question. In what way is this ministry unique? Since this is being recorded, I'm not going to because it's being recorded, I'm very happy. Comfort and to function in. And this is not a subjective evaluation. I submit to you gentlemen that there is a ministry, obviously, of administration. And I'm not playing on words and throwing out cliche. The uptightness and intenseness we have in the church today, I would suggest to you in part is because we don't understand the varied applications, the marriage of Ephesians 4, and how it is to be carried out in terms of administration. The gentleman, I ask you to walk through with me this one thing, as you will soon be going out, presumably, into districts. You will be confronted with counterparts as I. Consider the fact that those who are in executive, quote-unquote, position have been there and are there without any academic or other pre-preparation than that which has been afforded me, and that's the school of heart experience, and usually as someone else. And I'll not leave that school and possibly never want to. I'm going to jump down to question four. This class that asks the person to address itself, how can the seminary, how can the church make a unique or consider a unique contribution? We're on level four with that. Would it not seem to you, as I am suggesting, I think I hope pointedly, that when you consider the, and I won't detail, the tremendous responsibility that are inherent in the responsibility vested in this position, that some kind of preparation be given to men who either aspire or have demonstrated prior to the assumption of that office, excuse my back, would it not appear that some preparation prior to the assumption of that office be given. We may draw analogies, I think, in other areas of the church, campus ministry. Many get in with just literally go in and let their feet. But more particularly, I think, in this area than in any other ministry of the church, where men are being called upon literally because of the position they occupy to make decisions that could alter, move, change, divert directions of ministry in the particular enlarged parish that they're called to serve. Nowhere, in my opinion, does a paucity of administrative and academic knowledge to proceed and to perform these functions exist in the church today. Now, if you want to quote me, and this is to be recorded, I'm talking on all levels of sin. For the sake of emphasis, gentlemen, and not because I can't think of anything else to say, I'm going to say it again, but I'll try to put it in a different way. An organization, and let's call it God's secular organization, I mean non-strictly ecclesiastical, would never survive and run in terms of administration the way the church is happening now, to kind of fumble through. I guess this is what I'm uptight about and have been for a good many years. And I submit to you, this is, I hope, not such a personal vendetta that I am sharing my problem. I'm sharing what I think is a concern that I have for the church. My peers admit to this. We struggle with the credibility of being able to perform, particularly in today's church, being able to perform within the complexity of opportunity, not problem, but opportunity, positively, in which we find ourselves. Speaking personally, I love nothing better than to be able to get away and find out what I'm supposed to be doing. Now, why, I can't try to second guess those, but why was that plucked from a parish and I was handed this tremendous responsibility? I submit to you, gentlemen, that the only reason I know from a human point of view is what I did during the summers when I wasn't at the center, were a couple of interesting experiences and opportunities for me of non-church involvement in administration apparently became evident to someone, but that happened uniquely to me. And for the office I now occupy, gentlemen, I find that what I learned in the summer and the experiences that I had in God's world in a non-confined and boxed church context offer me more fodder for the task with which the Lord has placed before me than, or as much, I'll qualify that, as my seminary training. What is the future of your kind of ministry? I would skip that one real fast and say that I think the future lies in the resolution of this problem. Let me try to diagram mentally at least what I'm concerned about. We have this demonic human quasi-ecclesiastical stepladder within the church that kind of suggests that the guy on the lowest rung is sent this poor parish pastor out in the boondocks, if you will, in South Dakota. We've got a couple of fellows here, Wabe. And then somewhere midpoint in the ladder is the relatively affluent man who can afford at least one hard shot and amounts a year in a suburban parish, 1,000 communicant members with a vicar who runs the mission. And then we ascend the ladder to within that mechanism, and we strive for offices within the church. And if one wants to follow this ridiculous dichotomy of line and staff, you can choose line or staff, and you can become circuit counselor and district president and aspire to all of these things. This is, I think, probably the biggest dilemma. When in fact our Lord kind of reversed that whole procedure, when he took that wash, towel, and basin posture and he said, whoops, God, the whole thing's reversed. You sons of thunder, okay, this is what you wanted to be, I'm going to tell you, you who are in positions or feel that you have been given special gifts than they were, now you are called to minister, to equip. You're not to be above, autocratic, administer, if you will, in the context of coming down. If there's anything that I think bothers me and would wake me up at night, it's the expression that might be heard. It's not heard happily enough in our area too much anymore. We're under the mission board. But what is it that there's a, we have this feeling of it's a ladder, and I think it's this ladder which confounds, if I'm reading this classroom correctly, it confounds and can perplex. If you run it horizontally and you say we're all linked together in a ministry of equipping one another in mission, and we have relationships and responsibilities that should be delineated and must be, but it is not this, it is not aspiration, and that to aspire up to be an executive or to be a district president. If we understand it in the spirit of Ephesians 4, to be the, if you will, even more equipper of equippers, and the feeder of feeders, and the least among the less, then I think there is a legitimacy of aspiration which can be identified before the time of graduation or during the parish ministry, which I think could possibly and conceivably make the kind of academic or pre-induction to these special ministries possible. I don't know whether I am being clear. It won't be because you're not astute, it will be because I may be fumbling with words. I am saying that if there is anyone of you to whom God has given gifts, innately or demonstratively, for the area of administration, which is not an unholy word in the context I will try to explain in a moment, it is not wrong to aspire to that ministry. We need men, and to be equipped academically for this, as long as we see it in the context of being an equipper and not as being in a bishopric or episcopal system which relates downward to people. This I admit to some difficulties in resolving, and I'm going to express and have the greatest joy in my life expressing to you the joys of this kind of ministry, lest you think that my introductory remarks started off in a rather pessimistic way. One of the things that we have found to be the biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity in our ministry is to try to marry, if you will, the legitimate ministries that pertain to the office of the execution of ministry in a broad context, meaning a district, and that is the image that the Lord has left us, that is, being equipped. The two don't always dovetail. The expectations, for instance, of those or the image of the, or the caricature of those who are executives will differ, unfortunately, in many cases, from the kind of description of marriage that I suggest should be part of that office. And where one is looking or seeking humbly to be in an equipping role, this can be taken as a sign of weakness. All right? How shall, in South Dakota, for instance, or nationally in some areas to which I relate, how shall funds be dispersed and priorities established? Well, I'm saying that you're uptight when you hit these things and you need training to make the kind of value judgments on an administrative basis. But the way they communicate it is in the spirit of Ephesians 4. You don't walk across people, parishes, and the very thing that you are trying to submerge, and that is the spiritual integrity of an individual or a group. Unfortunately, that latter part is where often the hang-up comes. Yesterday, as a matter of point and illustration, your part of the church in South Dakota set a budget. Some people are going to be helped, some people in their own mind are going to be hurt because of it. They expected more out of it. And the Lord calls me and fellow staff in South Dakota from that moment on to communicate this in a way that is in keeping with Ephesians 4. Let me share some other things about this office, this special ministry, and I'm saying it again, I think just being in the office of an executive is a special ministry, which is vastly interesting to me.
Excuse me, there's some coffee?
I'll take a pass on that, well, thank you.
Tea?
No, I'm going to turn brown if I have some mention of time. One of the worms that eats into the legitimacy of administering the concerns of the church, and I hope it isn't necessary for me to diagram this. An executive, through the value judgments he advances to the board, can literally be very instrumental in whether a mission station will start here or close here. There are tremendous implications for this work. I hope I don't have to diagram the importance of the legitimacy of the office being performed, or whether a school should continue, whether we should have parochial schools in place X, Y, or D, or whether we should turn to some other form of Christian education. Someone has to be footloose and free to get in and dig and think and make certain recommendations to those who have the final authority within the district or in the Synod in carrying them out. And back now to this, trying to make this marriage holy wedlock instead of deadlock. To carry this out in the spirit of Ephesians 4, that is to listen, as I'm going to hope to do very shortly, and to have the posture of a minister and servant to the church and at the same time exercise this responsibility, seemingly is in conflict if you consider that administration deals with strengths and the advancement. And if you will, ministry in the spirit of Ephesians 4 essentially deals in lifting or, if you will, weakness. I'm going to address you as a future parish pastor because it's as much applicable there as it is in my now function. You're going to have the same thing because all of you are going to be administrators of your parish. Whether you want it, like it, you're going to be thrust into it. And probably this will be the biggest hang-up. And will continue, unless something happens, it will continue to be your biggest hang-up because it's something that's going to be thrust upon you that is, I would guess, for which you're not totally prepared. And I'll explain. I'd like someone to challenge that remark so I may explain it later. Getting back to this so-called thing we have in our church about having everything nice and neat, success stories all the way down the line, that's my image. You see what happens? If the people to whom I relate as a minister among ministers see me only as being interested in success, in strength, that's where I feed. And not being concerned about weaknesses and problems, that's Ephesians 4, then I am as remote from what's happening as I can conceivably be, even though I may be sitting eyeball to eyeball with a brother. The 17 or 18 guys in our parishes that receive district subsidy were passed. If they see me as someone who wants to have subsidies go down every year and giving for synod go this way because we're told that it's got to go this way, and I'm only concerned about raising my image so the district is neat and clean in every way, I follow orders down the line. They'll see me in that light, and if you think they'll share their problems, and we'll get to where we can accentuate, because of a bared weakness, where we can get to the pulse and accentuate into a strength. If they see me in that, I'm repeating, only in that administrative posture, nothing's happened. This, I submit, will happen to you and your minister also. Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Thank you.
Does the Synod have any kind of a program set up that encourages or perhaps instructs district executives on how to communicate with pastors? In the particular district I was in last year, I think we had a real communication problem between the executive board and the local pastor. And I don't think it was because either one of them was, unreceptive to the other. It was just a sort of, they don't understood each other or something, there ought to be some sort of liaison.
No, I don't think there is. Not to my knowledge in any, I guess if you, I'll say no, and that, I guess, says what I could have said in one sentence, and I've taken 20 minutes to say it. Thank you. That, I guess, makes the point of that first 15 minutes. I think there are. I'm not sure that, and by the way, I'm not presenting myself as the epitome of the success or the, or the plus sign of all that I see wrong. I'm bearing my soul positively so we can get at some of the things that where the church, I think, needs the power of the Spirit. I don't for a moment think that the area or line of communication is down to that third level in South Dakota or anywhere else. But if you must know for the record, I guess I'm a rebel, because I happen to be concerned about this area. Perhaps not uniquely, but I am verbally. It's my daily prayer, gentlemen, that I continue to see myself as someone who ministers to pastors, congregations, on a horizontal level, so that, as I said before, we can respect and continue to accentuate the individual spiritual ascent and not the opposite, that is coming down to them. Now, quite obviously, the circumstances surrounding, there are so many neat equations which come out. Accepting myself, this is what usually happens. An executive gets to be an executive because, quote, he is a successful pastor of a successful congregation with so many years' experience, has developed a cadre of influence, he receives a call, and his image to the brethren is one of success. And often the brethren are afraid, oh boy, this guy, he's got all the answers. And you know what often happens? He probably does, in some respects, have some. But it isn't important, if I sit down with a brother, it isn't important at the point he tells me what his problem is. It isn't important if I have the answer, or think I do, to say this is where you ought to go and be. The important thing is where he is and where he can go. What I would do and could do, were it any different, is totally irrelevant. If a man has difficulty in coping with the complexities of a dual parish or a three-way parish, and I were to say to him, well, Jack, when I was in the ministry, I had this, and it's real simple. I'm not helping him. This is what I did. Then he'd say, Jack, where you hung up? And start with him, and move, trying by God's Spirit to move him. This, let me speak, and I'll get this off my chest. I'm really going to send some out now, if you don't mind. This problem of confusion of administration or positioning in terms of pitch, instead of it being horizontal, meaning Ephesians 4, to vertical, is going to be, I would submit to you, your biggest difficulty. Watch it, fellas. Watch this satanic aspiration to ascend. If we use that kind of measurement for success in the church, and that has been, unfortunately, the measurement. Here, if you will, and this isn't pseudo-psychology, it's demonstrated, that can be proven. It is what can happen to a fellow who falls victim to the church's own standard of being successful. He gets out into Parish A, and he wants to succeed, and there's nothing wrong with this. It becomes a disease if he feels that he has to succeed always. And if that thing, or this matter of ascending, growing, if you will, instead of growing in grace, or if he feels that he must grow in the eyes of man rather than God, here's what happens. He uses his parish as stepping stones. They've got to be uptight, neat. He brings in the sails, tightens the ropes, gets rid of the slack, cuts out the delinquents, so that his record looks real good. So then when he sends in his stewardship report, doesn't have any delinquents, and his per communicant giving is astronomical. It's on the record, in the staff book. And when the DPs run their fingers down, or flip coins as to who they're going to call into the district, they say, here's a guy that's gung-ho on stewardship, and he's just born to give that congregation who's low on that emphasis a real, that's the man we want. You know what he's done? He's cut away the very least of those brethren to whom the Lord has called him to serve. Because of his own propensity to use that parish and to get it so, use that word tight if you will, or clean or neat, it can veer off into other directions, and some even more odious. He can be suspicious of his fellow pastors, and believe me, John, that does bring, doesn't it? Is there some place that I won't completely burn? I know we want it loose, but to conduct it after a fire raid is... he can become suspicious of those who he thinks are ascending faster than he is. They get a large parish, why not he? So, the interprofessional jealousies arise, and gentlemen, we've got within the church. You come back, you've been on vicarage, you've had half an eye open. Or he can use his family, and I would consider this to be the most odious. Where his wife agrees with him, where she has the same distorted view of what is a successful ministry, then you have a companion and a team relationship that's headed to destruction. Because they manipulate and abuse their children. They have to be nice, neat, fashionable, happy, normal human beings. Gentlemen, the gals that I've sat down with who have had difficulty in their marriage as it pertains to being related to a parish pastor boils down usually to one simple thing. Is they resent not so much his vocation, but his deification of his vocation. That he will not give any time for the family, for his wife. That he expects more of them than God would expect, being human. But they happen to be, unless they shape up, obstacles to pressing on the ladder upward. So you can exploit your family. When this boll weevil, ecclesiastical boll weevil, creeps in and hits, and it's with us, generally, you've got a completely distorted, you don't have a healing church anymore, and a ministering church. It doesn't say so. Mr. Moderator, I'm straying, and deliberately do it, because I said I was going to chuck out of this. To give you time to react. But when you get this ladder going, and it's there, let's say I've got a real problem, and I mean a real one, and there's not going to be one of us who won't have one or more. To whom do I go if this ladder has been hung up? Do I go to my counselor? Do I go to my district president? Because if I tell him my problems, you know, that kind of gets me in the black book. And that black book exists. What will the DP do, or the counselor, after hearing my real deep problem, whatever it might be, alcoholism, you name it, when I might be considered for a call or when he gets a questionnaire on me? And so that man who wants to ascend will submerge or usually submerges. The problem magnifies and suddenly the pressure is too great and all of a sudden you get a subterranean explosion. Okay, here comes yours truly waltzing around the district. See, I'm no threat to anybody because I'm not on the line. And I vowed I'd never say this, but I'm going to. Don't I know what I'm talking about? I'm no threat. I would say that 3/4 of my ministry is spent in listening. Listening to problems. Not about stewardship and mission. But to the problems of how do you hack it with a wife who doesn't like to be on the sticks? Nowhere. Because I think they feel, well, gee, he's not going to get in my way. I submit to you, gentlemen, something has to be done about this in terms of reversing or at least making horizontal the total ministry of the church. It's very little interhealing and interministry of the spiritual therapy that I see going on either between brethren and more particularly to those who have been assigned responsibilities beyond that of what we would call a parish. Now, I regard South Dakota as my parish to the areas to which I have been called. I don't know what I'm going to get. Okay. One of the interesting things that, more to the subject now, that has happened that I've observed is when the image of trying to get out of the way of the Holy Spirit, make decisions in prayer, but get out of His way and let in all humility, not forgetting the therapeutic use of the ascending God either. Communicate. Suddenly a complete new aura and vista. It becomes a contagion. There's no, I said to one of the fellows before, I'm almost speaking to contemporaries in terms of age. Some of you will know, or some of you may still think, of the stereotype of the Dakotas. It was like the Sargasso Sea of Synod. When guys were assigned there, and still may be in your mind, they wondered what cross they crossed. Yeah. And we've been trying, gentlemen, we've been trying for 7+ years to keep asking ourselves why and not treat symptoms that come to the root of the problem and try to create a climate in which men and women see opportunities for ministry. It isn't done. First of all, let me talk about the district. It is not the soup kitchen of Synod. We're in great trouble. Of the two twin orphans of the church, one that has been partially recognized, of course, is the inner city explosion. I know nothing about that. The other is the dying countryside. And I know in the minds of many, South Dakota is held as if it's in a constant. That is, it is tied up neat. You don't really need the talent out there because we've had churches there for 75 years. They're stable. They're secure. Gentlemen, with any number of demographic and other factors I could mention, I won't bore you with those. We have real problems, which, if you flip the coin in God's eyes, there are opportunities for ministry that are unbelievable. Just unbelievable to the guy who doesn't want to settle for the middle place and the common place, but wants to get out where the action is in that kind of a ministry. And it'll take as much or more spiritual guts to work in the Dakotas as it will in the inner city. Now, I'm not talking about lack of scratch, even though that's a problem in some areas. And I'm not talking about loneliness necessarily, because that's been overcome with the superhighways. I'm talking about seeing, being confronted as a pastor with getting somehow through what the church really is. That it is not a group, it is not an organization, but an organism. And that it's not a bastion to escape decision, but a resource center, if you will, to make it. That buildings and institutions and graveyards, memories of which, commendable as they may be, do not constitute the historical record for the future of the church. But what is God pleasing? In South Dakota, we've got at least two of you who have made it. The development of our great strength out there followed the railway. Church every 7 miles. It took them in a buckboard an hour to get there. Our people, simply because we have majored in minors, will not drive 1/2 hour on today's highway to merge or consolidate and form a nucleus of strength with another parish, because it means the loss of a negative identity. I say negative, they do not say this. Now, this is not putting the people down. I'm saying we have taught them this. And now we have to be patient, in love, and with patience, and in the spirit of Ephesians 4. Fellas, for a ministry of a nature that has a challenge, you won't find any greater than that than exists in the TMC and sparsely and dying countryside. You won't find a greater challenge. Unfortunately, fortunately for men such as Jim Cross and Brooks and others, they have seen this, and there is now embryonic attempts to familiarize. The men who are going to equip others for shaping of ministry, meaning you, prior to your graduation, so that when you sit down with replacement personnel, you can say, this has an appeal to me. It's no secret, I think. And this is not drum beating, but I think probably two of the fellows, do you remember Bill Pepke and Ken Wright? I think they must have had your respect. And when you think that they were both assigned to South Dakota by their own wish, both out on one nowhere from nowhere, and I mean, Ken working with a congregation with a ministry to the American Indian, in a somewhat, he's not what Bill is on a reservation. But we see the turn, or the beginning of the way, if you will, where men, a true and tried spiritually, such as yourselves, are saying, where is the action? And those who are inclined are saying, Lord, that's for me, and I want it. Now, let me mention one thing, and then I'm going to stop and we will take a breath. By the way, I do have a prepared thing I can run through real fast, but real fast. A, I hope I have not left you the idea this is all negative, and I have well, I'll let you react. It was not my purpose. My purpose is here, I think, to be honest with you, as I've tried to be honest with myself. I see, I'm trying to see it and tell it as it is. I don't have all the answers. I don't have many of the answers. But I submit to you that some of the answers that have been given regarding special ministries, and particularly rural ministries, and innovative ministries, that have come about, whether they be in South Dakota, have been the result of this contagion of men and women gathering together in ministry and saying, how can we equip one another to equip the same? I've deliberately tried to shy away from identifying what's happening in South Dakota simply because it sounds like drum beating. If you'd like to know what's happening, I can tell you. And where things could be happening, I'd try to tell you. But gentlemen, I'm just so pleased that in his wisdom the Lord has apparently changed a bit, at least, the stereotype or this caricature of the opportunity to minister in a great part of God's kingdom. Anytime.
I appreciate you being on with us. This is what we wanted in this class. I see what you said going sort of a two-prong kind of thing. The ministry on an executive level and the ministry on a rural tech level. And I hope maybe we'll have more questions on both of those levels, because this is something on Vicarage that always has bugged me. The pastor-to-pastor relationship is really disturbing, and this climbing of the ladder thing. The other thing is the ministry in a rural area. What new ideas are there in rural ministry that you've seen taking place? And maybe later on we can comment on the executive type thing.
Yeah. Now, I might say that South Dakota, I'll say it before the fellows leave, this produces some giants. what's happening? What's new? What's exciting? Am I getting through to you, or is there...
John?
Let me rattle through a credo, if you will, okay? This is the posture, I think, of any church, but I'm boy, oh boy, of any church, but particularly where we have the unique challenges that face us. Number one, what is the posture or the image of a contemporary congregation right now in mission and ministry in South Dakota? One. I'm reading, but it might spark a loose answer. It recognizes the corporate nature of the church as the body of Christ. It's another way of saying that we're all together. Two, it recognizes the reality of unity in diversity. Speak for 20 minutes on that. It is viable. Cliche again. It has freedom of movement, buttressed, girded by the words of confession and relevant form, not moored, chained, or confined by tradition, which today does not equip, communicate, or edify. It demonstrates body movement, and I'm talking about the body of Christ. I'm trying to think in terms of a band. Wouldn't it be ridiculous if our forms, if you visualize with me, and this is maybe a bizarre example, a marching band frozen, either in step or on one note. Now that's what can happen. The church can fossilize. We get so hung up on these forms that we stick with them that we're frozen. On the other hand, I am not knocking, and I want to make that clear for the record, I am not knocking legitimate structure. Because equally ludicrous would be a band, if you will, each playing their own tune and marching in different directions. For the security and well-being and stability, emotionally and otherwise, of every one of us, we need structure. But we need structure that moves us across the Macedonian bridge of today, and not that has us marking time or dancing around in circles. Now, what structures are they? Well, in South Dakota, in the rural countryside, the biggest challenge is for the pastor, I believe, to try to undo what 50 years have done. Now, I don't want to, I'll expand on this if you'd like. The people in the countryside have had just about everything taken away from them in a small city. Small towns, they're dying. The doctor can't live, so he goes to the trade center. That happens to be 30 miles away, and the people can drive in, and they do. The merchants are disappearing, etc. Now comes school, with consolidation of school. See, his identity as an individual within this community is being stripped. No, he wants to think in terms of the past. And boy, now comes the church, the pastor, if you will, and suggests that the one living symbol that remains in the community, that being his little church that the grandfather donated the bell, and I don't mean to be facetious, you suggest that we should dissolve this? And move in with the doctors and the lawyers and where the school is. They'd rather, just kind of wither and die. Now, I submit to you, in the spirit of which I began this, it is not their fault. They have not shaped these ideas themselves. We've told them how good they were. We have built these fortresses. In fact, pastors, for reasons of security, have and continue in our district to maintain them instead of assisting them to what I call planned obsolescence. By the way, no way to dissolve a rural parish, no good way, no motivation, ethical or whatever you want to call it, no, it is by the avenue of the vacancy, where you apply the pressure and say, look, you two parishes happen to be vacant and they can't, make it alone. Now we're going to have economic sanctions. So you're going to marry to call one man. And they say, well, what else can we do? So they call one man. He's serving two parishes. Two congregations. Not a parish. 12 miles apart. why, in some, because of the fact they have not been led along while a man has been there to see their oneness 12 miles together, instead of their separateness 12 miles apart, the only thing they share is in their annual griping as to who is going to pay what portion of the electric light bill as computed by the window watchers, depending on the time that they see the pastor in Parish A as opposed to Parish B. I'm sorry, fellows, if this sounds negative. I'm telling you as it is.
It happens.
Telling you as it is for a reason. I think it provides nothing. It provides the opportunity I'm suggesting exists and the challenge that's there. Not that we all go and weep in our beer and our coffee and say, well, we're years too late. We're not too late. We haven't been soon enough, but we're not too late. Yes.
You mentioned that the, in a rather general way, that the parishes in a rural area like this can be very challenging. The ministry there can be very challenging. And reading a book in this area, the author came to the same conclusion also and sort of presented some of the challenges that could confront a pastor in a community that was not completely dead, sort of, so to speak. A community where there was still some life, where he could then build up his people to really be Christian ministers in that community and serve one another, serve that community and so on. But I was wondering if you could be a little more specific in what you see as challenges to a pastor in that area. I mean, I mentioned this.
All right, number one, I'm with you, and I'll speak right to that point. Number one, if you're assigned to that area, for God's sake, listen and learn. Don't regard it in this stereotype I regarded. There are forces and factors that have arisen on the particularly agricultural scene and in this dying area in the last 5 years particularly, which affect the laity and their knowledgeable or partially knowledgeable. And if you have the stereotype, this is a close, you know, all I have to do is preach and offer, you know, the rudiments and not get something about what's happening in NFO and the tension between that and Farmers Bureau and the undercurrents that are flowing in the community. This is where a great deal of contribution can be made. When we can go back to the days when a pastor could and was regarded a community leader because of his education. Lack of education or failure to minister in many of our parishes is because our pastors do not understand people and their problems. NFO, if it line them up, and I would imagine that half of the pastors serving in the agricultural community might even have difficulty identifying what that anachronism stands for. Or the fact that the Farmers Union or Bureau and the various cooperatives happen to take a diverse view, either politically or in their methodology as to where they're going. And it's cutting families apart, brother against brother, splitting parishes. We had shooting wars in South Dakota 3 years ago on a holding action. We almost had it again this summer when guys would line ditches with rifles and shoot tires out of stock trucks going to... Now, you ask me, is that any different than mugging in St. Louis or Chicago? And this is happening with our people. So I'm saying, I think that we have to come out and say, look, this picture that I may have of this quiet countryside, pure air, air you can't see, nice trees, beautiful. All of this is so easy and calm, you know. It isn't. It isn't. The poor small farmer. This is where I don't want to get off into a sociological or economical thing unless you ask me to. Maybe there are more questions.
Jim Cross is mention that there's a rumor going around about a rural institute comparable with the urban institute.
In South Dakota.
In South Dakota, is there anything?
The start is that we're being assigned, and this is, we're being assigned a number of personnel. It's been underway for 8 months, and very conceivably, the counterpart of UTC could eventuate, whether it be in South Dakota or somewhere near.
That here would be the urban pastors for understanding of the rural background of their.
Boy, because of the transmigration. Our biggest export is our youth. All right, here's another challenge. Try to get this through.